Okay, I have some speaker cards. Why don't we move to those? Tricia Wotan, Sarah, looks like Hargrove, Joy Huffschmidt, and Steve Kahn. Four cards.
Thank you very much, Chair and members of the board. My name is Tricia Wotan. I'm with the City of Monterey Associate Planner. And I just want to note here in the beginning that the city does appreciate the carrot approach as to the stick approach that has been taken with this joint effort. And also, we appreciate the involvement of the permittees in the development and review of products that Dominic and Darla and the joint effort team have been bringing together. And going forward, we believe that a collaborative approach like this one is more effective than the stick approach. So we would encourage you to take this route on more items, and we sort of wish we could do that more with regard to the Phase 2 permit. But it is what it is. Okay, so what I am here to stress is that we're hoping that you'll make special consideration for smart growth, sustainable community strategy projects. Those projects are the ones that integrate transportation, land use, and housing policies and requirements together to achieve greenhouse gas emission target reductions locally. And those are promulgated by SB 375 and AB 32. For the city, those are like the core downtown high-density redevelopment, transit-oriented projects that we consider smart growth, and they are a statewide priority through the California Strategic Growth Council. On a parcel-by-parcel basis, for our smart growth portions of the city, we predominantly have smaller redevelopment sites with little room for infiltration or the typical green infrastructure BMPs that have been shown here today in this presentation. And so often one remedy that people suggest in those situations are, well, why don't you just build higher rather than having a lot line to lot line project that is only three stories high. And for us locally, it's important that the board recognize that there are a lot of political hurdles, such as with our community prefers lot-line to lot-line redevelopment and an upper limit of only three-story high buildings in the downtown core in our high-density transit-oriented parts of town. And so for us, it may not be feasible to change that political tide or to change the codes that are currently allowing 100% building coverage or only allowing three stories. And then, for example, I did want to just mention, just this week I learned from our planning department that we actually, unfortunately, did have a much-needed redevelopment project in downtown Monterey just pull out, and the reason stated was the new stormwater requirements. The numbers didn't pencil out for them, apparently. May I have a minute or two more?
You can have a minute.
Okay, thank you. So anyway, in that instance, we felt that the different competing statewide priorities were in conflict and ended in the result of the loss of a much-needed project for us. And so that is an example that I just wanted to share. And I recognize that won't happen always. That was just a situation we had. Anyway, we're hoping that staff going forward will be able to take a more holistic or 360-degree view with regard to smart growth projects specifically, and potentially work with the California Strategic Growth Council, the Office of Planning and Research, or the local traffic congestion agencies to better understand the progressive and streamlining approach that is being taken statewide to this type of development. And I'll just end there.
Thank you. And
thank you.
Have you, before today, spoken with Dominic about these concerns?
We went to the Watsonville joint effort presentation on the watershed zones, and our staff did provide comment to both Dominic and Darla at that. I'm sorry? Yes, and Dominic and Darla have come and they've toured those parts of towns that we have that are our specific planning high growth, high density areas.
Good.
So, yeah, it's been a great collaborative effort for
good.
Us.
Chair?
Yes, Mr.
A very
Delgado.
Question. I was not expecting what you said to start with, but I think it's very interesting, because I just want to make sure I understood that you're suggesting to somehow get water credits or water permits for stormwater requirements by doing indirect things that affect greenhouse gases and other sorts of smart growth values.
So I guess what I'm saying is that the approach that does end up potentially being promulgated takes in consideration these other statewide priorities, understanding that implementing clean water is an important priority. But also, for instance, the Strategic Growth Council, their objectives include improving air and water quality, but they also include encouraging greater infill and compact development, revitalizing urban centers, assisting local entities to implement sustainable communities. So I think it's important that whatever the approach is for those areas of town, that the team be talking with, like, the Strategic Growth Council. I don't know if we are. And really looking at what alternative methods we might be able to utilize in those areas. Or potentially maybe there are some exemptions that could be allowed in those areas, those parts of town.
So if you do shared parking and mass transit compatible components, that you would like that to be considered when we get to the stormwater requirement piece?
I would say that when you implement smart growth strategies, you're reducing the amount of travel time in vehicles. Vehicles are a big contributor to water quality and pollutants. And so those projects help reduce environmental impacts. And I think that there should be some type of credit given. I'm not sure how, but just that be a consideration with the regulations that do come down.
Mr. Johnston.
This actually came up also in our Salinas stormwater discussion. There is a little bit of a our regulatory requirements on stormwater for infill development and redevelopment do tend to push somewhat against lot line to lot line, against high density development. And there are not just kind of general air quality benefits, but some very specific water quality benefits to high density infill development, both because it discourages to some extent outfill, where we're taking less impacted areas in terms of stormwater and developing them. And it also because of the impact, which you just mentioned, on traffic, because it's hard to directly correlate, but such a good chunk of water quality has to do with stuff that washes off the roadways. Clearly, if we reduce the amount of traffic by doing transit-friendly, high-density infill development, smart development, then it does have a direct water quality impact, and I don't know that we're capturing that at this point in terms of how we figure and how we incent people to do stormwater remediation and development. And I think that's a really useful concept.
Okay, thank you. Sarah Hargrove.
Yes, hello. My name is Sarah Hargrave, and I'm the Environmental Programs Manager for the City of Pacific Grove and also the current chair of the Monterey Regional Stormwater Program. And I wanted to just concur and support my colleague Tricia Wotan's comments about the need to weigh the range of environmental goals and make sure that any water quality goals and objectives are not in conflict with other statewide goals, such as the smart growth and infill development, Strategic Growth Council principles that are really, as Mr. Johnston stated, trying to avoid green space, greenfield development and focused development in existing urbanized areas where watersheds may already be compromised. And so in a setting like Pacific Grove, where we are completely built out at densities averaging over 10 units per acre with fewer than 100 vacant lots in the entire town, we are struggling a little bit with how these joint effort requirements are going to apply to us. And so even though the majority of of development projects that the low-impact development criteria will apply to. We don't have those type of projects occurring in the city of Pacific Grove. I do think it's very important that you make sure that you do have criteria for new development and redevelopment projects that are really scaled based on the size of the project, so that there is a true link between the cost of implementing the LID features and then the overall water quality benefit is really there. Otherwise, we're asking applicants to spend a lot of money without a lot of benefit, and that's very important in our community. I also wanted to comment that at this point in time, we have not found that the joint efforts water management zone data is detailed enough to really work for the municipalities in terms of what applies. The watershed management zone map has a dot for the city of Pacific Grove that covers the entire city, and I can't even see which zone we're in. So it would be very helpful to have a table that identifies which jurisdictions are in which management zones. And so back to the point of in urbanized settings, what do you do? We really are trying to be creative in the city of Pacific Grove. We recognize that on private properties that are existing, we really don't have a lot of opportunity to do things such as remove impervious surface or rooftop disconnect. We can do those kinds of things where people are willing, but the size of projects we get are not going to be within the thresholds for requiring them. And so as a result, we're pursuing some creative efforts to really focus on our public right-of-way and city-owned property for doing some residential and some watershed management and retrofitting that, if I may continue for just a moment. And so, for example, we've incorporated into a draft urban forest management plan a whole series of stormwater-related measures related to our urban forestry activities and the public street right-of-way. But those types of green streets projects, you know, funding is not readily available, and the linkage between those things are really getting lost on our community. And so there is a lot of resistance occurring from the public and even our city council about kind of mixing the two efforts. And I think it's there's a lot of science behind what you're being presented here today, but it needs to be accessible to the average decision maker. And so I see that as a significant challenge for the joint effort presentations going forward, because I don't think there's necessarily always the connection mm-hmm. in people's mind between.
Do you have any recommendations on how that might take place?
I think as you receive environmental review documents through the State Clearinghouse for things like our urban forest management plan, comment letters in support and, you know, information encouraging the jurisdictions to pursue these types of measures, letting our decision makers know that we're not inventing these things on our own. They are coming from regulatory requirements.
The city councils and the boards of supervisors.
Exactly.
So what is the best way for us to help do that?
I think while the workshops for the stakeholders are very good, they're only occurring at the staff level. And so there is a need for some of that information to be getting to elected officials and the actual decision makers, because we are able to understand these things at the staff level, but convincing our decision-making bodies, explaining to them why, helping folks understand that these are oncoming state mandates, it's very challenging at this point in time.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe this is the entree that we've needed to do our board outreach that we've talked about for years and have not really been received that well on the other end with invitations. I mean, you know, we've been looking for ways for our board to break bread, you know, with our regulated municipalities, governments. Maybe this is the opportunity to do that. So you're thinking of presentations to a council or a board of supervisors.
Okay. I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Or even because in the Monterey Peninsula, for example, where our regional stormwater program is actually consists of 8 different agencies, you know, there could be some joint meeting
okay.
where multiple jurisdictions could come at the same time. I have one last point.
Go ahead.
So the city of Pacific Grove is also, our Our receiving water body is an area of special biological significance. We have direct ocean discharges. And so the new proposed ASBS special protections being considered at the State Water Board next week, which haven't yet been adopted, they do incorporate low-impact development as one of the requirements for development of an ASBS compliance plan. And I would just ask here at the Central Coast Regional Board that the information that's coming out of the joint effort, the real characterization of the hydrogeologic setting that has very limiting constraints in our ability to actually implement these types of measures, are incorporated into those future compliance plans, because Pacific Grove sits on a slab of granite bedrock with a layer of 60% to 70% impervious surface coverage over the top with a direct discharge to the ocean, and we have very little soil land capacity for actually capturing and infiltrating and retaining stormwater flows. And so we are not really even if we weren't built out necessarily in a hydrogeologic setting that would be appropriate for LID. So I just would ask that you really incorporate those scientific data that you've collected into those types of compliance.
And I take it you've communicated that to staff, because there's nothing we're going to do right here except in July there's going to be a recommendation made to us.
Right.
So has the joint effort worked for you in terms of getting communication to staff on what's important?
Yes, I believe the workshops have, and there has been open communication. We're also having a lot of these discussions with some of your staff here at the Phase 2 permit level. So this is also issues on the state of statewide importance, not just here with the Central Coast joint effort. So.
Okay. Well, I would encourage you and the others to make good use of your time before July. You know, to get that heard with staff and at least resolved as far as you can get it resolved. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Before you go, Dr. Hunter and then Mr. Johnston.
Thank you. I just want to understand, I think you mentioned that you're currently the chair of the Monterey Regional Stormwater Group.
That's correct.
And how many entities are involved in that?
It's the County of Monterey, cities of Marina, Seaside, Sand City, Delray Oaks, Monterey, Carmel, and Pacific Grove.
Okay. And so I was thinking exactly along the lines of what Chair Young proposed, that, you know, there's some way that we can help to bring these issues, clarify these issues, bring the science, the technology, and, you know, the impetus for all of this effort. And how it actually integrates with stormwater goals and so forth. But I'm wondering if your group, and specifically as the chair, if you have considered or discussed strategies for conducting this from the group, because you are an effort that is endorsed and committed to by each of these entities. So in other words, you're representing each of these municipalities, you're there for a purpose. And so to take that work, that effort, and convene, if you will, a different level of workshop, and with real specific outreach to the elected officials to say, it's time for us to give you an update, a report. This is your group that you appointed. You know, you've designated me to do this.
Yes, and I believe that is happening at a staff level, and each of the management program committee members are going back to their respective elected bodies to report back on this information. It's just that a lot of this is happening at the staff level, and at the policymaker level, the extent of information and effort is not necessarily reaching them, and our effectiveness as staff to them could really be bolstered by some also information coming back from at the regional board level.
Okay. Mr. Johnston.
Just a quick suggestion on that. You mentioned things like your urban forestry plan, that at the times that they're coming before your elected officials, it might be useful to get input from the regional board. And of course, given the number of municipalities in the region, a lot of that stuff goes right by us. So my suggestion would be, while as a city employee, obviously you have to be careful about asking people to lobby your elected bosses, you can certainly ask us to weigh in when those things come out and to comment to the elected officials. That's completely appropriate. And because you're the ones that know when those specific points that are useful are and when that stuff's coming out, we don't track it all.
Right.
And I think you'd find us quite responsive.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Joy Hufschmidt, followed by Steve Kahn.
Good morning, Chairman Young and members of the board. I'm Joy Hufschmidt, and I manage the Project Clean Water Program for Santa Barbara County. The joint effort has been underway for about 3 years now, beginning with the formation back in 2009. And while a great deal has been accomplished by the consulting team and the water board staff with the development of the watershed characterization and the scientific basis for the methodology, the most important work products are yet to come. And those are the products that will translate the scientific foundation into the specific management actions. And some of those key components include, first and foremost, the numeric criteria, the actual numbers that will be required to comply with. Also is the compilation of the hydro modification control criteria that is currently being being used by other jurisdictions, not only in California but around the nation, and the summarization of the range of approaches that are already in place that are being practiced, and to identify those that are most appropriate for the Central Coast. A second critical component are the applicability thresholds, the type and size of products that will be required to include the controls, and then finally the details on the alternative compliance, which is a somewhat untested approach and has met with some difficulties in some of the jurisdictions that have been piloting that approach throughout the state. So these are the real nuts and bolts of the methodology and all the pieces that the MS4 permittees and the development community will have to determine whether they're feasible and whether they can be applied and what we're really up against. So given that the most important products are yet to come, I'm a little concerned about the time frame that has been forwarded by staff. The Joint Effort Review Team, the JERT, is a technical advisory group that's been put together to review the deliverables of the consulting team. And they'll have 3 weeks to review all of these products before their comments are due. And then the stakeholders receive the methodology and will have 1 week to review those documents before the first workshop, and an additional 3 weeks to get written comments in place. That doesn't seem like it's enough time to really review for feasibility, to get input from our development community, from our engineers, from our planners, from our decision makers, et cetera. The methodology has been a long time in coming, and the stormwater community will be living with it for quite some time into the future. So I think it's important that we give enough time to review it, to crunch the numbers, to vet it with our various interest groups, and to be able to provide meaningful input into the final product so that we can see real-world situations, whether it fits into real-world situations and whether real improvements to water quality can occur. So I would encourage you to look at moving back the July board hearing date to at least September to give us some more time to be able to review the documents that are forthcoming. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Interesting suggestion. So maybe when we hear the rest of the speakers, we could talk about that. Okay. Dr. Wolf?
I'll hold my question to the end of the speakers.
Okay. Steve Kahn, Alfredo Castillo, David Athey, Valerie Huff.
Good morning, board members and Officer Biggs. My name is Steve Kahn, and I'm with the City of Santa Maria. The city prides itself on its working relationship with the Regional Water Quality Board and its staff. The stormwater program is another example of how we've worked well with your staff. I would like to thank Dominic Rock and Darla Ingalls for all their work on this very complex issue. And I'd also like to thank Ellen Pritchett of my staff for all her work on the stormwater program. She has quite a bit of work on that program and does a great job. I think the joint effort is a good way to develop and implement hydro modification control and LID instead of having each agency be required to do it themselves. This reduces the cost for staff time and the agencies and also makes the project easier to implement over the region. One of the concerns that the City of Santa Maria and other agencies had with the joint effort was the potential for agencies to be held to the same hydro modification control and LID requirements, even though we have very different topographies, rainfall amounts, soil types, and receiving water bodies. For instance, Santa Maria is relatively flat with high percolating soils, and most of our stormwater percolates into the ground. This is why different conditions, this is much different than many other regions in the area. The consultants and the Region Water Quality Board staff have succeeded in identifying and understanding different watershed processes in the region. This will help identify numeric criteria that will fit specific watershed processes. So I think they've done a good job on this front. Santa Maria has worked very hard to start implementing hydro modification control and LID. We have put together working groups of community members to inform and involve them with key decisions. We have involved most departments in the city in the planning and implementing. We have started to review our municipal code and general plan for modifications, and we've applied LID to new projects where applicable. The City of Santa Maria is currently required to fully implement hydro modification control and LID by December 31st, 2012. With numeric criteria and applicability thresholds still to be presented, this is very hard to accomplish. We still need to develop methods for complying with hydro modification control and LID, bring these to the community to educate and consensus build, develop standards and specifications for these methods, write amendments to the municipal code, and finally, bring an ordinance to the Planning Commission and the City Council for approval. This is a tall order by the end of the year. We'll make every effort to complete this, but there just may not be enough time. We ask the staff be understanding of this issue and work with agencies to adjust the schedule accordingly if we are making progress towards the goal. So I thank you for your time and your staff's effort, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Kahn.
Thank you.
Thank you for the heads up as to what may come down the line.
Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Alfredo Castillo.
Good morning, members of the Water Board. I first want to again thank both you, the board members, and staff members for this joint effort process. I'm relatively new to the joint effort itself. I started back in April 2010, but it's been great to have this dialogue with the city. By the way, I'm a planner for the city of Tascadero. And so it's been a great dialogue between board staff and the city as we're going through this effort of potentially new thresholds and new regulations. With that being said, we both share a common goal, and that's clean water and protecting and having a healthy watershed. So having those two goals established, us in the city of Tascadero wants that goal to come through, and same with you and the Water Board. The presentation stated that the joint effort is going to try to avoid the one-size-fits-all approach. And unfortunately, so far, which we have seen through the preliminary thresholds that have come down from the JURT, I feel that those the one-size-fits-all approach is actually going to happen at this point. We feel that at this time the staff has not really taken into consideration state goals and laws, specifically AB 32 and SB 375, which has been stated earlier by a couple of speakers. AB 32 is a greenhouse gas initiative to reduce greenhouse gases to 1990 levels by 2020. And SB 375 is actually the main implementation tool of AB 32, which is the Sustainable Community Strategy, which basically targets development and provides incentives, specifically environmental incentives, CEQA incentives, to create infill development and redevelopment. On top of that, the main cog that helped facilitate SB 375, our redevelopment agencies, recently were declared dead by the state Supreme Court in December of 2011. Infill development is really, you know, it's a catalyst to helping our downtowns. It's a catalyst to basically avoiding greenfield development, avoiding development where the healthy watersheds are. And that's, you know, I think that's a priority number one the Water Board staff, as well as you as board members, should share. I think the joint effort needs to take a look at a little bit further into making sure that we are in compliance with state laws, that we are in compliance with AB 32, and that we do take a look at how these thresholds and applicability thresholds affects the implementation of SB 375. This is just one example of how we need to carefully review as a city, as a municipality, these new thresholds, because this affects us in many ways, but it also affects developers, homeowners, and other, and just residents in general. And these thresholds are really dear to, because it really affects people's property rights. I feel, and we feel as staff, that the schedule is too tight to really accomplish what needs to get done, to have a proper public dialogue and discourse, to have the, to review the main crux, which is the occupancy gate thresholds and the numeric criteria, and to have you as a board adopt those by July 12th really doesn't leave much time at all for us as staff members to digest it, review it, make recommendations to our planning commission, our city council, and most of all, get a buy-off from our residents, our key stakeholders, our developers, and those that are really going to be implementing these rules. I feel that the Water Board and the Water Board staff, may I continue?
Yes.
I feel that the Water Board and the Water Board staff should really take ownership into providing a public discussion, a public workshop, and really going out and vetting these new rules, because really this affects not only staff from a municipality at a city-county level, but it really just does affect everybody. And we really do need a true public dialogue in order for us to really fully understand these rules going forward, because if we continue to just move forward at a quick pace, really rules that may come about will stand for quite a bit of time. My recommendation at this point is to push back the date to your December 6th board hearing, and for the reasons being is this is an election cycle, and unfortunately this can get a little bit sticky during election time for many municipalities. And second off, seeing that we are in an election cycle and it does take time, it does take effort to get a consensus building between residents, between developers, between those folks, the consultants, December 6th just really makes a lot of sense in terms of being able to bring our wide region together in San Luis Obispo to really go over these rules and have the recommendations ready that are properly vetted to our public. If you have any questions, I'll be happy.
I do, Mr. Castillo, and this is almost a similar question for Joy. Through this joint effort process, have you been communicating with your designers and planners and architects in your communities so that some of this has been getting vetted along the way? Because I hope what I'm not hearing is that one person or two people from your community have been involved in the joint effort, and none of this has been truth-checked against your own community members that could provide that feedback along the way.
I used to be a consultant, so some of the items that were pointed out before you, like the bulb outs and those type of design items, and that's stuff we were doing back in 2006 and 2007, so that's nothing new in the consultant world. I mean, that's stuff we push for, a good consultant would push for as part of project design to reduce costs. But the reality is this, that we do talk about it over the counter, and we do talk about it that, hey, there are these new rules coming up, but I just don't think it's under the radar screens of our elected officials at this point. And I honestly feel that as much as the joint effort has been a very positive thing for the cities, it's been a very positive thing for the consultants that have been at the table, there has not been a great amount of public discourse with this thing. And so what ends up happening is if we adopt these rules, and we go ahead and we change our codes and we start implementing these rules, we're just going to get a bunch of pitchforks thrown at us by not only our council but our residents, and we'll be tarred and feathered out of town.
But I understand that, and I'm just kind of questioning what you have been doing during this process to maybe look to the future as to what's going to happen with all of a sudden there's a joint effort recommendation to this board.
I can only speak to what we've done here in efforts at the City of Atascadero, and we have talked to our major stakeholders and developers. We've talked to our council members, and even though they talk, and then obviously it goes playing telephone tag sometimes, I like to call it, just there hasn't really been a true public workshop in a sense of getting a public together and stating these are the rules, we need comments, or even a sort of a consensus building that typically when in a planning process that you would typically see.
Mm. Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, go ahead,
Joy. Can I just take a moment to answer your question?
Sure.
Santa Barbara County has actually made a pretty concerted effort to get the word out. We've been letting the engineers, the architectural community, our elected officials know that this has been coming for the last couple of years. And one of the interim requirements, you may recall, is to launch low-impact development.
Right.
And to do that in a pretty concerted way. So as part of that effort, there was a good outreach program. But this is a game changer, though. With the new numeric standards, it's going to be a whole new learning process for those same groups. But we'll of course be going through that. And you may recall meeting with our Board of Supervisors 2 summers ago now, and we'll probably be repeating that again.
Okay.
Thank you.
I was just hoping that there had been some kind of communication with your community as this joint effort process has been unfolding, so that when it comes to the recommendation of the board, it's not going to be completely new to your community.
Yeah, no, we've absolutely been trying to get the word out, but again, with the specific criteria, it's going to take another education process.
Right. Okay, thank you. David Athey, you know, when I saw you, David, in the room, it didn't occur to me that you were no longer part of staff, and then I had to look at your card a second time to realize.
That surprises
who
me.
You
it's been
are
5 years.
Yeah. 5 years?
Over 5 years.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman Young. My name is David Athey. I'm the Deputy Public Works Director for the City of Atascadero. I can speak to what city staff has done. Alfredo is new to the process. He's a planner in our city. I have contacted the designers, the architects. I'm also the chairman of the Technical Advisory Committee for San Luis Obispo County. And that's a group of cities where we sit around and talk about all these issues that Dominic has presented to us, the studies and the information to date. So we have gotten the word out, and I have kept our council updated through my city manager, keeping them aware that this is coming. I mean, they know it because they all got the December or the January 15th letter in 2008, which kind of started this whole thing off. So. They're aware of it. I think most communities are. But I also agree with previous speakers that more needs to be done at this point. We're right at the push time when the most important information comes out, the criteria, the numeric standards. How are they going to be applied to the lots in our city? And that's what it really comes down to for our citizens, the developers, people doing projects. We are concerned that you know, not purposely, but this process pushes development in the greenfield zones in the city. We want to have a robust growth rate throughout our city, no matter what happens. But I want to, I just want to start off by saying I got off my topic a little bit here, but we would like this process, the schedule, to be changed till December 6th. Stretch this out. Give us more time. We want to talk to Main Street. We want to talk to the business owners. We want to talk to our residents. We want to talk to the designers. We want to talk to our my council members. We want to inform those folks. Let them know what's coming. This is how it's going to affect you on the ground. There is a real cost associated with these changes. It's happened before when the flood regulations came in. That changed how you develop sites.
David, I hope you're going to be talking about the benefits, too.
Absolutely.
Not just the costs.
Absolutely.
But actually the cost savings over time.
Yes.
And the city of Santa Barbara could, I don't know if you followed the project they put in with the McKenzie Park parking lot, but there was a lot of upfront cost with that permeable surface and stormwater retention. But when they looked at, they're not going to have to do repaving, re-asphalting over a long period of time. It's actually going to be a cost savings in the end, and it's going to benefit water quality. So please, when you're giving the pitch, give them the whole picture.
Absolutely, and I agree with that. And that's why we're asking for the schedule change to December 6th, so we can have those conversations, see how this is going to affect the city, positive and negative. We recently did a project. We restored a creek bank in Atascadero, and our biologist from Aldhouse Mead told us we have one of the best steelhead streams on the Central Coast. So we want to protect that, and it's a high priority for our city. So I agree, we will do that. But I want to also just get back. I want to commend your staff. They've done a great job of reaching out. This is probably one of the, for what I've worked with, one of the best public processes that I've seen coming out of the regional board staff. It's, we should be commended for that, and we appreciate the work that Dominic's done and the work to keep us informed and involved in the process. You know, it just it wasn't something that was just sprung us out of the blue from behind closed doors. So I want to acknowledge that. You know, really, Alfredo hit it for us. We have a lot of things to look at, and we ask the board provide us the time to do that.
Okay. Thank you. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Valerie Huff?
Good morning, members of the board. I'm a civil engineer with Wallace Group, and I have also been an active participant in the Hydro Modification Technical Advisory Committee as a part of the joint effort. I am here today to talk to you about a few concerns we have, but I want to start out by stating that Wallace Group is definitely an advocate of healthy watersheds, and we support your goal to improve water quality. We also believe that regional land use planning is the backbone of a healthy urban environment, and that the hydro modification requirement applied on a parcel by parcel basis will really result in poor land use planning compared to what we would consider an appropriate watershed wide scale of looking at the best places to implement these hydro modification requirements. Specifically, I'm concerned that the requirements for replacing impervious surfaces being the same as installing new impervious surfaces will actually drive redevelopment projects outside of our urban core. I know that this has been talked about a few times already, but green building in terms of a strong, dense urban core, I believe, is the direction that we need to be headed in order to better protect our watersheds. We talked about traveling and reducing traveling on roadways will help water quality, but air pollution is also a known contributor to water quality pollutants. And so there's a wide range of things that affect water quality other than just where the water hits the ground and the pollutants that might be sitting there. I'm also concerned about the discussions we've had with board staff related to requiring infiltration on the majority of projects. From a design standpoint, it is crucial to understand that infiltration is not appropriate for certain sites depending upon location related to other development, but also surface soils, and understanding that infiltration changes spatially throughout your watershed, but also throughout the season. And so what we may see in the early part of the rainfall season is a high infiltration rate. And then with saturated soils, we expect to see runoff even with those highly infiltrating soils. As a design engineer, I would typically design to the worst case scenario, which would be a saturated condition. And if you're asking me to design an infiltration basin under that condition, we may actually be over-designing a project and actually infiltrating more water than we would have in a natural condition. Just in summary, I want to state that, again, Wallace Group supports your goal of improving water quality, but we believe that a regional approach rather than a parcel-by-parcel approach to hydro modification is the appropriate compliance method. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Okay. Dr. Wolf.
Yep. You know, based on the input from our various speakers, it seems that perhaps there is a need for a little more congruence between this joint effort program and smart growth initiatives in municipalities, many issues of transportation, greenhouse gas emission, etc. So perhaps one approach is to concurrently establish a template that would be a set of performance metrics. And these performance metrics basically would look at, okay, what's the direct or indirect benefit or impact pertaining to greenhouse gas emission because of transportation? What is the direct or indirect impact because of perhaps in one location inadvertently we're trying to push development elsewhere? So this would allow the municipalities to basically enable them to achieve their goals of their smart growth initiatives and still be consistent with the expectation of this program. And when I'm saying performance metrics, I'm not suggesting that the regional board becomes the local APCD agency and you have overlaps. But it would at least allow, bringing the question, okay, are we causing inadvertently, a cause and effect that would be negative in some other areas? So it would be basically going through this little list. So I would suggest to staff to explore this. And some of the smart growth initiative programs do have actually a list of what are the key factors to be included. So I don't think it would be too time consuming, to take some of the, what I'll call the low-hanging fruits out of this, this program.
Okay. Mayor Delgado.
I was interested in the alternative compliance, because if you can't do something on a particular parcel, what can you do as an alternative? So I hope that there's thorough consideration of what that might be. And one speaker mentioned there are problems elsewhere. It's not a well-tested implementation yet. And so I would hope that we have a full understanding when this comes back to us, since we're not the first to do it, what are the problems with alternative compliance others have experienced?
Okay. Mr. Johnston?
Regarding what Board Member Wolf said about a template approach, I just want to make sure that not just considering impact on air quality, but that as we are looking at particularly urban core redevelopment, that's smart growth, high density redevelopment, and is effectively reducing automobile use, encouraging transit use, that we capture the stormwater benefits of that. And it's not clear that we are at this point, and I just want to emphasize that with staff. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if we want to talk about the schedule questions. It's a separate question.
Right, we're going to do that, I think, at the end of this. Mr. Jordan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple reflections. One was that I think there is a concern on election season, perhaps, and also maybe that that the process so far has been at a staff-to-staff level rather than a staff-to-politician level. I can just tell you from experience, just having lived through a five-year general plan update, that when you're talking about smart growth in a downtown urban core, a developer sees that as going up as high as they can and going out to the property lines and having little space to embrace some of these principles. And then at the same time, a city is living with historical parking standards that still want to give two parking spaces to every mixed-use residential unit. And so where do you get the space? And if you're not chasing both of those tails at the same time, both the political end to get the change in the parking standards and the improvements you want, you run up against a wall. And the other suggestion would be that we get a clear picture on what you're doing with different topographies, where people in an entire region or city actually have no permeable capabilities, and what are their choices then? I'll just lead off the point on scheduling. I don't have any problem with pushing it off to the end of the year, personally.
Okay.
I think that's fine.
I mean, I don't either, if anyone else doesn't mind, but I'd like to hear from staff. Mr. Briggs?
Yeah. I think it's worth going back a little bit to how I started the presentation, which was a little bit of history, and remind you that it was February of 2008, exactly 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, where this process essentially kicked in and alerted the communities to what they were expected to do. I think what we're hearing a lot of, it comes down to how much the Water Board staff is supposed to do relative to what the municipal entities are supposed to accomplish, both from a staff level and a decision-making level. And that is always a big push. We ask for something, there's a pushback. Well, we want you to do it, or you to facilitate us doing it better. And I think to get to Dr. Hunter's point about, you know, to what extent have they made the effort to actually achieve awareness and alert their public and decision makers to all these issues. I mean, that they've had 4 years to do this. And I would also remind you that this joint effort itself, beginning in 2009, included not just a period of 2 years to sit and wait for us to develop numeric criteria, but specific expectations regarding the gaps and the obstacles within municipal codes that would actually interfere with the implementation of low-impact development, including historic parking standards, which don't make sense and are incompatible. These communities have had a lot of time to start developing those pieces. They've had specific milestones laid out for them in a very specific schedule. So just to wait to this point and say, oh, we need more time, it's predictable, but I think ultimately it gets back to the question we always have is, well, how much more do you want Water Board staff to do, and how many of our resources do you want to expend, versus let's let the people actually responsible for making those changes get going?
Well, I'm not hearing that they're expecting staff to do anything in terms of their outreach to their community. I'm hearing that they're waiting for those draft requirements to come down.
I think I heard something different, but okay.
I mean, unless I'm mistaken, okay. In other words, they're really looking for kind of almost an end product from the joint effort that they then can show their elected representatives and get some feedback on. So that's how I'm seeing nods and everything.
I can guarantee you that if you push this meeting back to December, it is not going to be me stopping work on this project. It's going to be another several months of additional work on this project. So it might be their intent to go and do all that work and have more time to do it, but the reality is that's just not going to happen. So just beware of that.
Well, listen.
I wanted to address a couple other things when you're ready.
Okay, but before you get off that point, no, I'm gonna at any time a recommendation comes to the board, I mean, you're aware that we could do almost anything.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, I mean, that's out there.
Sure.
And so this is an important item. It's going to change the way things are done. And so, you know, have an open mind. It may happen where we're not ready to actually adopt something, depending on what we hear. But in terms of needing more time, I think we're not going to be receptive to going beyond December to voting on something in terms of what do we do with it. So we're getting there.
Okay.
All right. On that point.
Yeah.
On that point.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
So I heard two suggestions. One, that we push it to September, and another, that we push it to December.
Yeah, December.
My concern would be, considering the political season, would be starting in December, we would be looking at new city council members that are going to ask to weigh in on something that they haven't had any exposure to. So my suggestion at this point is that we listen to the September date so that we are working with folks who have already been exposed to this and the potential for, you know, the shift that could occur if we have new elected officials coming on board in November. I think that could be another high hurdle, and we'll hear in December that, wow, we've got, you know, three new city councilmen. They're not ready for this. So I would go with September. It's just my comment.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Jordan?
Maybe they do it different, but an election in November, didn't you typically take your chair in January? I mean, to address that point, I don't think you'd have a new council person. You might have a lame duck council person in your example, but maybe not a new one.
Right.
Okay. Any other thoughts about the date, at least?
Yeah, my only concern was, I think that the concerns that were raised about the 1 to 4 week periods between when stuff would be available and the close of comment, I think that's a legitimate concern.
Yeah.
Because it does take right. some time to pull together comment.
Right.
And so I think as we look at this, if we do push back the ultimate date, I want to make sure that we at least expand a little bit some of those comment periods as appropriate.
So you'd like to see staff move the comment deadline to like maybe July 12th?
Well, what was pointed out like was that the draft requirements go to the joint effort review team on March 21st, and 7 days later they meet to go over those. And 2 weeks later, all their comments are due. That seems like a tight time schedule. And the second thing is the draft requirements go to the stakeholders April 18th. The first stakeholder meeting is only a week later, and the draft comments are due 30 days later. Now, I don't know. I'm one of the least experienced people on this board in terms of what are appropriate windows for comments and how long it takes people to pull together. I would defer to others, but I think that's a very specific concern that was raised, and I want to make sure if it needs to be addressed, okay. that we address it.
Okay. Mayor?
Could July 12th be when draft recommendations come to the Water Board as far as getting prepped for the September meeting, so we have some kind of a discussion or workshop on them, providing municipalities September through December to digest everything that's already been tentatively vetted by us? And then in December, January, with their new councils, et cetera, they could come to our final hearing where they'd be able to provide final input, already having had 3 or 4 months of opportunity to be involved and okay. get staff-to-staff discussion.
Dominic?
There's a couple complications there. One is the Salinas permit. We'll have to be aware of the timelines of the Salinas permit and pushing this back. We'll have to change some of the deadlines for the Salinas permit implementation of the requirements. We can deal with that. So the other thing to be aware of is two board meetings. You're aware of all the staff resources, and this was already raised by staff, so I don't want to belabor the point, but there is an opportunity cost of staff having two board hearings on this item.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
You know, it was pointed out earlier that this is the fourth year on this process, so I don't quite see what adding an extra couple of weeks here and there, you know, what harm is that going to cause? It took us 4 years to get this process, so I would be very uncomfortable at the finish, toward the finishing line, to try to hurry up and miss opportunities of having all parties, you know, feel comfortable with the process. And, you know, it's water under the bridge if, you know, we lost a year because of the slow progress. But I think, you know, getting a good product out of this is very important. So what my suggestion yeah. is, in supporting Mr. Johnson, is let's give this a chance, and being realistic in giving a more appropriate period for review and comments.
So you're saying the December board meeting, but directing staff to adjust these due
yes.
dates
yes.
according to what you heard from us, okay, to allow for more time for them to comment back to you. Okay, and Dominic, you wanted to continue with some...
Just to respond to a couple of the comments
Go
that
ahead.
Were raised. One was that... for example, Valerie Huff from Wallace Group indicated that the challenge of implementing an infiltration requirement in certain areas where soil types prevent that or create a problem for that. So those are examples that alternative compliance is provided for, but you do have to demonstrate that that is truly an obstacle to implementation. It's not going to be just simply showing us a soil map or showing your city a soil map and saying, see, I'm in class C or D hydrologic soils. So there'll be a little more documentation of those obstacles necessary, but certainly they're there and they're provided. The other is just that broader issue of these issues of SB 32 and AB 375 coming into effect on these communities, and we're very aware of that. You can't really live in the state and not have some awareness of it, at least if you're a public servant. And so the Water Board recognizes a lot of the issues that are coming at the communities. We also acknowledge that parcel-based approach is an inferior approach to that final regional solution. And actually what we think we've started in the joint effort is the framework for developing those broader approaches. So I think those are going to be down the road a way, but we definitely need to begin with parcel-based approaches. And it teaches, in a way, it teaches the communities consultants, really gives them the opportunity to learn how to do this. But more critically, at some point, it is a decision that we attempt to make on water quality basis, whether or not we provide additional relief in an infill type of a context versus the new development context. And it is very challenging to develop quantitative and well-defined metrics for how much benefit we're getting by locating the projects in these already disturbed areas. We know that generally that is the case. But for the Water Board to live up to its own mandate and be in compliance with the Port of Cologne Act and the Federal Clean Water Act, we really need a water quality basis for that decision. After that point, it is a policy choice that this board will have to make.
Right.
Okay, so our recommendation is going to be based on water quality and an awareness of these trade-offs, knowing that there's not very many good metrics for evaluating.
And I'm on board with that, and I think that is what Mr. Johnson was saying when he said he wants to make sure that these other good efforts, beneficial efforts, are capturing some of the stormwater benefit. Is that correct?
I understand the problem of the legal problem when you don't have a metric. At the same time, as you stated, and I agree with you, there is a generally recognizable water quality benefit to infill development, high density infill development, and I'm not sure how we deal with that. I'm fairly green here, and I understand the problem of taking something into account when there isn't a metric for it, but we similarly have a problem of ignoring it when we are aware of its existence. Mm-hmm. So, it's a challenge for staff.
Right. Okay. Any other staff comments?
I just wanted to try and summarize the direction we received to make sure I understand it correctly.
Good. Okay.
So just really, really briefly, it is to extend the comment periods that we have up here to get more input from, or to give the cities more time to provide input and other stakeholders as well. And the other reason to widen the time or to lengthen the time would be to provide the cities with time to greater prepare for the joint effort and to talk to their decision makers and just get prepared for implementation.
That's right.
Okay. And September is a reasonable date?
Well, I think December is, unless I hear otherwise, we don't need to vote on it, but December, is that okay?
That's fine.
Down the line?
Yeah. I think Mr. Chair, I think not only that, but that will give more time for turnaround on those particular dates. You can spread that out so those cities or counties or those joint groups have an opportunity. You know, somewhere 10 days is not really a good turnaround time for some people, because a lot of people have to contact, a lot of information they have to bring back.
Yep,
so I think you can spread out your timetable.
And Chair?
Go ahead.
I'd suggest that moving it from July to September gives us 3 months where we can pad all those timelines. If I'm here in December, it's December. But so I think September would give us 90 days of additional comment time in there.
Okay.
So I wanted to follow up on staff's comment the last 10 minutes. I thought that...
I'd like to deal with the date, if we
that's
could.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I thought that they were saying there's a way that we could have this in September and rearrange the schedule to give more comments to stakeholders that stakeholders were asking for.
That's my suggestion.
And consider that in the bigger schedule of the bigger picture of all the water board projects. I thought that was their gist. Okay. So I was looking forward to hearing us talk about the potential for September to allow for the stakeholder timeframes that are more reasonable.
December was raised by Tascadero, is all. Okay. Santa Barbara asked for September. What's that?
I think there was two or three asked for December.
Okay. Okay. So...
And I thought the reasons they were asking for December primarily were because that is too short of a time for them. But if that can be changed, and I'm hearing from staff that it could be such that they'd have more time, but we keep with September, I think that's what I was hearing, then September might satisfy everybody.
Yes. Mr. Kahn, was it? Yes.
Steve Kahn, City of Santa Maria. I appreciate the direction you're going in. There's two things that are going on here. First, there's your board adopting and approving the numeric criteria. And then there's the agencies dealing with it and learning how to implement it and passing our ordinances. So there's actually two dates going on. So one thing I asked for is pushing the requirement for the City of Santa Maria to have our ordinances passed on December 31st, 2012, which would happen if the numeric criteria got pushed. So I like the early discussion about having your July meeting where you actually discuss the numeric criteria and then get public input on it, and then having the December meeting where you approve the numeric criteria and then us pushing each agency's deadline out. That would be my input. Did you understand all that?
So that's different. That's having the two board meetings that staff
okay.
is
and then that's fine. It's your call.
Yeah, the other problem with that is it does not, if we are even having a review in July of draft recommendations, it would be, I think, inappropriate to do that without going through all of the comment in advance. So if we did that in July, there would be no ability to stretch those comment periods. Yeah.
So then I would just ask for the December approval of the numeric criteria and then pushing each agency's requirements to implement out further to do it. Thank you.
And given that, I don't see why we couldn't do this in September and make the decision in our decision that day to include a delay of implementable milestones.
To December.
Or into March.
Or into March, okay.
Once we decide,
okay.
It may include deadlines that fit their reasonable abilities.
Okay. All right. September? No?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mike, Jordan?
I still am fine with December because I think what I'm hearing is that the outreach that has taken place so far has not involved the political decision makers. And trying to corral them through this process in addition to the joint group is, I think, is key to solving the issue of not going through the same process again in December, hearing the same complaints. And so if they need a couple months and the commitment is from those speakers that they're going to involve their decision makers, then I think it's time well spent, personally.
Let's take a vote on this so we can get done with this item. We got other things to move to. And this is, we're just going about a date. I'll make the motion. All those in favor of moving this to the September board meeting, say aye.
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 Are there any opposed to that? It's okay if you're opposed to it. No, you don't have to be. Okay, well, it carries. So September is what's going to happen. Okay?
And I do want to make sure that there is a direction to staff to attempt to find a way, recognizing that almost every speaker raised this question of infill development, recognizing the problem that staff raised under Porter Cologne of crediting and integrating something that is difficult to quantify, mm-hmm. but at the same time recognizing the problem of ignoring something that we're aware exists in terms of a benefit and the conflict with the other state policy. And so I would like to see a direction to staff to attempt to rise to that challenge and find a way to deal with it.
We were aware of that issue prior to this meeting, and we're even more aware of it now. So we will work on that. Thank you. Yeah, we're